So this morning I'm going to talk about what practice is. So after meeting with a student the other day, I wondered if people had a understanding or understood about how our practice works in Soto Zen, the kind of transformative power of practice. And then Thursday night, I was teaching the class at San Francisco Zen Center, and Eileen is in that class, and she asked the question. She said, "What is practice?" So I thought maybe this would be a timely, good time to talk about what is Soto Zen practice. So I want to talk about what my understanding of Soto Zen practice is, in the hope that I'm going to illuminate for you and for others what the actual practice is. And then the broader question of that is that what bodhisattva practice is, because bodhisattva practice and Soto Zen practice are the same, except that there are different schools of Buddhism that practice bodhisattva practice, so in that way it's not the same, necessarily the same path, the same way of understanding how we get there. So I would say that Soto Zen practice very broadly and generally falls in two categories. One is the formal practice that we do, and the other is how we practice in our everyday lives. And the two of them are intertwined with each other. Same thing. So the essential form, if you will, of Soto Zen is how we engage in formal practice. So that would be Zazen, it would be ceremony, it would be taking the precepts, it would be doing work practice, all the things that we do at the Zendo together. So first, a very important aspect of, and I think for Dogen, perhaps the most foundational aspect of Soto Zen practice is sitting Zazen. So Zazen is a direct connection with the mind, or the philosophy, if you will, of Soto Zen. The first thing is to be fully present and to enable our ability to experience that. So that's one aspect of Zazen. A second one is our connection and function with all beings in manifesting the world. That's another aspect of Zazen, which results in the bodhisattva wisdom and practice of compassion. So that would be the third aspect. So I want to talk a little bit throughout the lecture of how that manifests through our activity in formal practice. So shikantaza, just sitting, zazen, directly connects us with our world. It presents itself to us, and we present ourselves to it right in this moment. This is the aspect of, in Genjo Koan, we say to carry the self forward is delusion, to meld myriad things to meet us as realization. That's essentially what's happening in Zazen, to allow myriad things to come forth and meet us. So that's why we say, and in a way, you can't like force that. You can't intellectualize that. You can't like say, now I'm going to make myriad things meet me while I'm sitting Zazen. It doesn't work that way. But this way that we just sit in the middle of that experience at any given time. So because it isn't an intellectual activity and we can't force it into some shape that it's not, we say Zazen, let Zazen sit Zazen. Let Zazen sit Zazen. Let the self settle on the self. That kind of language. So that captures this non-dual aspect of the whole of our world practicing with us. If we let it happen. So for that reason, we try to avoid letting our ideas about what we think we're supposed to be doing get in the way of what we're actually doing. So Jocko and I would go to the supermarket, go to New Leaf, and occasionally none of you, but occasionally a student that we haven't seen for a while at the Zendo, somebody who came for a little while and then left, will come and they'll say to us at the supermarket, they'll say, "Oh, I can't sit Zazen. I think too much. I can't sit Zazen because I'm thinking." And of course, we always make some gracious reply to that. But the reality is that that's not an impediment to thinking. Thinking is not an impediment to sitting Zazen. Uchiyama Roshi says, thinking is the secretions of the mind. You know, it's just what our mind does. Okay, so going back to this, if we look at Dogen's instructions for Zazen, which he discusses in the Fukan Sazengi, which means universally recommended instructions for Zazen. So first he points out that the Buddhas and ancestors sat Zazen. So he said, how can we today dispense with this wholehearted practice of sitting Zazen? So from this we know that Soto Zen practice includes sitting Zazen and includes standing on the shoulders of the practitioners who've gone before us. This is really important Soto Zen. It's a lineage-based practice. We have faith in the lineage of these spiritual activities of our predecessors. We follow in their footsteps. We stand on their shoulders. We look to their practice as a guide to ours. We look to Dogen, right? We don't talk so much about Keizan, who's also a hugely important figure in Japanese Soto Zen. Keizan kind of put Soto Zen on the map, but he, let's face it, he was not as good a writer as Dogen is. And in the United States, we're kind of caught on Dogen. We're a little cult of Dogen here, which I think the Japanese don't like so much. They'd like it if we paid a little more attention to Keizan. But anyway, so when we look at this teaching of Dogen's, included in this is that we do this practice, specifically here of Zazen, but any of these practices, we do not to attain anything. Because this is the practice of Buddhas. Dogen says, this is the dignified behavior of a Buddha, sitting Zazen and doing all these other things that we do. That's why Uchiyama Roshi said, Zazen is good for nothing. So this saying, Zazen is good for nothing, is meant to encourage us to drop our ideas about the practice and just do the activity. Don't think about getting something out of sitting Zazen. So then Dogen says, well, don't worry about being smart enough to do this or to think about sitting Zazen too much. You just do it and see what happens. That's such a key part of our practice. You show up and do the practice. No matter, you know, it's like, that's one of the great good things. I was almost to say the joy, but sometimes it's definitely not a joy. That's one of the good things about going and doing a kind of practice period, monastic practice period, where it's like, that's all you're doing. You're getting up in the morning, you're going to Zazen. You could stay in bed, except then the Tenkin comes to your doorway and knocks on the doorway and they say, oh, are you sick? I'll bring you breakfast, you poor thing. You're sick. And then you're like, well, now you're guilty. Right? So there's this way in which it's this practice of you just show up, you just show up, you just show up and keep doing the practice. So it's not about thinking about it. It's not about some kind of philosophical system that you're trying to work out. It's not about some goal. It's just go do it. And Dogen says we should sit in a quiet environment, be moderate in our food and drink, and put aside all of our affairs while we're sitting Zazen. Don't judge your activity. Don't try to be a Buddha. So just go. Just be there. Then he says, gives us instructions on how we should do it and how we physically sit. And I think the most important aspect of his instructions is that our spine is straight, that we're upright in some way. Maybe you have a physical problem, and upright means lying down, and your spine is as straight as you can make it. So this way that you can think of it as an energy flow, that you do not block the energy flow. The instruction of Zazen is to put your tongue on the roof of your mouth, and there's this little bone here that closes up when you do that in your throat. It's a free-floating little bone that shifts its position. And from an energy perspective, it completely causes the flow of the energy to go through your body. We put our hands in a mudra, which creates this energy flowing, unobstructed energy. So that's what that's about, this sitting upright as a metaphor, but also as a physical structure of how we allow the energy of our own energy and the energy of the universe to flow through our body. But we don't force it. We don't try to make it. We just put ourselves in that place to allow that to happen. And then Dogen addresses our minds, and he says, I'm paraphrasing him, he says, the aim is not to stop thinking, nor is the aim to think. So some of us either come from traditions or read books about how you're supposed to stop your thoughts completely. I did this when I was younger. Lots of, you know, practices about how to have no thoughts at all. That's not Zazen. That's not the aim of Zazen, to cut off your thinking. The aim of Zazen is not to get caught by your thinking. And that's why Suzuki Roshi said, don't invite your thoughts to tea. The thoughts are going to come. Hey, I'm here. How about some tea? And you say, how about you just go out the other door? You know? Sorry, we're not serving mochi this morning. And then you just come back to the present moment. No judgment. Just, hey guys, love you. Not this morning. And then you come back. So this is the mind that we bring to all of our activities, all of our life. This is the mind that is the practice of the way. Another formal practice of Soto Zen is to chant, to bring service, to do service, recite the sutras, to do ceremonies. The purpose of morning service, our daily services, is to send out in the world the merit of our effort. This is that bodhisattva practice. I'm not doing this for myself. I'm sending it out. That's why we have the echo. They say the echo is the most important part of service. I dedicate the effort of this recitation to all beings, to all the awakening of all beings, which, by the way, does include us. But simultaneously, just like Zazen, we just do this activity. We let service do service. We show up, we chant, we bow, we give it away. This, in the course of this, transformation happens. It inevitably happens as we do this year after year after year. You may find yourself remembering a line of a sutra. There you are, you're having a conversation, you're driving your car, and all of a sudden pops into your head some line from something that we've been chanting every day. And if you pay attention to that, it may have something to say to you about the nature of what's happening right now that's applicable to what's happening right now. You may find encouragement. You may find faith in this, knowing that all the Buddhas and ancestors who came before you also chanted these chants. You may find that encouraging to know that we are part of some greater whole, and that's encouraging. And other things happen too. So these ceremonies are also a mandala. They are a sangha mandala. We embody the effort and connections with all beings. But we also embody immediately with the people with whom we are practicing at that moment. So we are the sangha mandala of the world's functioning. This circle of service, this chanting, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, is being actually physically enacted in the course of doing service together. We are taking this into our body. We are embodying the Buddha way by doing service together. We do this service with each other, and we do this service with the whole world simultaneously. When we do service, we're asked to coordinate, to listen, to chant and perform other specific body and mind activities that are like zazen. Things we do, no matter what we might think about them, are the things that we do in service without criticism. We make mistakes. That is our way because we are human beings. If you are Doan, you make mistakes. If you are the Doshi, you make mistakes. And yet, that's okay. We carry on. It's like having thoughts in zazen. Just come back to the present moment. Do the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. That's what we do. So we do this even in the midst of our judgments. It still is efficacious. It still is this mandala of the totality of the whole world's functioning as it is expressing itself in this moment, in our little group here in Capitola on 41st Avenue, doing service. And at the same time that we're doing service, hundreds of other Zen centers are doing service too. All of that energy coming forward, going out, rippling out in this great mandala of practice. Formal work practice is the same thing. So in work practice, we coordinate our activities as one mind, as one unit. Furthermore, we might do the same thing in work practice over and over and over again, even when it isn't necessary to do. So for example, when I was training at San Francisco Zen Center, of course for Jaku too, this is very much characteristic of temple practice, is that every morning when you're doing Soji, every morning the Ngawa or the porch around the Zendo gets cleaned. Whether it needs it or not, you're sent out there to clean the Ngawa. The result of that is a smooth, worn surface of this wood that is alive under your feet. This wood that you feel the energy of everybody who has walked that porch before you. You feel it. The generations of people who have done this practice. That's also what happens when we come to the temple. That's what happens when we reside in this space, is that our energy, our love, our commitment in this room, in this space, becomes imbued in the walls of this space. And people can feel that. They feel this effort. They feel this practice. And going back to work practice, when we also stop our activity when the bell sounds, not when we think it's done, but when the bell sounds, and we let go of our agenda about finishing something. Yet, if we do this over and over again, we learn to get it finished in the time it takes before the bell rings. So it's this intuitive reciprocity that's happening in the midst of this activity. So this is the activity of work practice. This too is this mandala that we're talking about, of how the whole world functions. This too is an embodiment of this. It's not a representation of it. It's an actual embodiment and function of how this world works from the bodhisattva point of view. And we do various jobs in the Zendo too. Here we hit the Makugyo, we're Doan, we're Jisha. All of these jobs teach us something about who we are. They teach us about ourselves. They teach us to address certain aspects of ourselves and to grow and to look at our fear and to look at our desire to be perfect. And in the midst of that, to grow with that. They are like teachers. They teach us. They're never judgmental. I've never heard the bell say to me, "Shinju, you really messed that up." But my mind says that, right? And then I feel badly. Just be with the bell. Just worry about the bell. Say, "Oh yeah, there you are. Let's make music together." The bell is not going to be judgmental. So what we're doing has a function. It has a particular way of being. And that's what we call practice. And it's what we call the cause, if you will, of realization. And yet, it's not a cause, actually. It's not a cause and effect. It is a resonance. It is this very body, as your very body, is the body of Buddha. Everything that you can name is the body of Buddha. Because all of everything in the whole world is functioning to support the function of everything else in the whole world. Even if we can't see that. Even in the midst of the Russians bombing Ukraine. Even in the midst of the things that we think are wrong and we dislike. What's underneath that is the world's altruistic functioning. This is what we call Buddha nature. And we are Buddha nature. And it is that Buddha nature that drives our practice. It is that part of ourselves that says, "Hey, go to Zazen. Hey, go to service. I want to be part of this mandala. I want to be part of the mandala of practice." And that very wanting to be part of the mandala is realization. That is realized response. I want to be part of this dance. Even though I'm clumsy, even though I step on my toes, I'm already part of this dance, and I want to dance this dance with you and with everybody. That's the dignified behavior of a Buddha. And in Soto Zen, we do it through these very specific practices. Because if it were just amorphous, whatever you felt like doing, there's nothing there to support us for transformation. Because all of us, when we just do whatever the hell we feel like doing, we do what we feel like doing, which is usually something that's easy. That's usually something that doesn't demand our best selves. That doesn't demand that our Buddha nature comes forward. We do something that is being some version usually of a couch potato, a spiritual couch potato. And we come and we do this activity together because it is this mandala, but it's also hard. It's hard to practice together with other people. It's hard to do this thing with each other. And you know, we just keep plugging away at it. Just like coming to Zazen, just like doing it this moment and this moment and this moment and this moment. We meet each other and we meet each other and we meet each other. And sometimes we meet each other, there's conflict. Sometimes we make mistakes. But if we're willing to sit in the middle of that fire, if we're willing to be bodhisattvas in the middle of the blue lotus of the fire of this life, then we find a way. Then we find a way to be with each other. And we can't do that unless we are with each other. We have to be with each other. And we do this practice together. And the doing of this practice has specificity. That's the underlying event of our activities that we do in the Zendo. That's what our practice is. And that's what Dogen calls the dignified behavior of a Buddha. Buddhas aren't celestial beings that float around and have this deep perfection in which everything is right. Buddhas are us. We make Buddhas. We make up stories about what Buddhas are. We let them encourage us, but really, we are Buddha. We are Buddha nature, along with everything else. But we're all we've got, right? I mean, that's what we know as human beings, is we basically do a lot of relating to each other. So this is our practice, and we learn about this practice by doing these formal practices. And then what comes out of that is this informal or unstructured practice that we engage in. How do you wash the dishes? Do you wash them with the care that indicates you value them as tools, and also as the dish as an independent being for whom you are responsible for their care? They live in your house. They work for you. They never say to us, "What have you done for me lately?" They sit there and they wait for us to pick them up and use them. And maybe they take great joy of that, knowing that they have this function. How do you drive your car? Do you drive as a member of the Sangha of all drivers who are currently driving? Do you cooperate, drop your own agenda when appropriate? Do you use your blinker? Do you stop at stop signs even when there's no traffic? That's like polishing the Angawa every day. That's like cleaning the temple even though it's not dirty. You stop at the stop sign. You look around. Oh, my goodness, I'm in the middle of a giant plane at a crossroads. I don't see a car for miles, but I stop at the stop sign. So, how do you treat your neighbors, your roommates, your pets? If we treated everyone like the way we treat our pets, this would be a pretty sweet world, wouldn't it? At least the way people treat their pets in the United States. So, you know, let's think about that. Let's think about that. Maybe if we treated everybody else the way we treated our pets, they would treat us the way they treat their pets because they would feel so good about the way they were being treated. They couldn't help but treat everyone else like that. And then if we did that, and most people were responding, we could deal with the people who don't respond and find more generosity and clarity and spaciousness in our heart for their unskillfulness. How do you act and respond when you're upset? Can you bring forth the teachings at times like that? Do you have a specific notion of what you need to work on in your life of practice? Do you have a vow to follow the Bodhisattva way, and can you articulate that vow? Is it something specific? Because saving all beings is a nice idea, and we should keep that in mind, but the reality is it's a little too big for us to be able to actually enact that in our own lives. Other than in this way that we talk about, let Zazen do Zazen, let all beings save all beings, save all beings. So, do you have a spiritual friend? Do you have a teacher? Do you have a guide who can help you realize your intentions? So, all of these things are part of our practice. In short, can we pay attention and respond in a wholesome way with ourselves and others? Can we do that? Can we sit in the middle of our life like we sit in the middle of Zazen? Sometimes we invite our thoughts to tea. Sometimes we keep coming back to this present moment. But always we just sit. Always we just sit. So, can we go into our mistakes, see our mistakes, and make atonement for it and transformation? Can we acknowledge that we make mistakes? You know, the Zen master who says, oh, practice is one mistake after another, mistake after mistake. That's not a, it's okay to make mistake after mistake, and yet we make mistake after mistake. So what do we do with that? So practice is the activity of our lives. So what I've talked about is these are the formal ways that we practice. This is the shape and form of Soto Zen. Other forms of Zen, like Rinzai, they do koans, they practice in a different way. Other kinds of Buddhist practice, they practice in a different way. We're all going, I think, for the same basic thing, but in Soto Zen, this is the form and the shape of what we call practice. This is, again, it brings us together, and it is what Dogen calls a dignified behavior of a Buddha, this desire to do this practice. So these practices that we do, the desire to engage in these practices is realization. That's all. It's realization. Practice is realization. Realization is practice. That's why we don't practice to get anything per se, because that gets in the way. That's why we do the same practice. I'm doing the same Zazen you're doing. When I got Dharma transmission, I did not get transmitted some secret teaching on how to sit Zazen. I'm sitting Zazen the same way you are. And some days, I've invited my thoughts to tea, like not just one thought, but a crowd, you know? But the practice for me is that I just show up. I just keep showing up for the practice. That's what Dogen's calling the dignified behavior of the Buddha, is that you just keep showing up day after day after day after day. And something is happening. I know that personally because I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen in you guys and I've seen it happen in me. This boring, if you will, life of just doing the same thing, whether it needs cleaning or not, and yet it does. It does, and it happens. And actually, it's not boring. So, I'm going to end with a little story. So, I'll just say that everything I've mentioned, including study, I haven't mentioned study, but studying text, but studying of the way in general, all these formal practices help us understand the nature of our informal, if you will, practice in the rest of our lives. So coming to the Zendo, sitting Zazen, chanting service, being Doan, all of these activities subtly work on us and create transformation. And it goes into the rest of our lives. It permeates the rest of our lives and begins to express itself in the rest of our lives. So, I have complete faith in this, that this is happening. I have faith that it's happening for you, and I have faith that it's happening for me, and I also, in some ways, don't need faith because I've already seen it happening over the years. So, Soto Zen students, dignified Buddhas, go even if they don't feel like going. I have to say that's one of the good things about being a teacher, because in some ways I don't have a choice. So I think in some ways I deliberately put myself in the chute so I wouldn't have a choice. So I don't have a choice. I have to come and I have to stand in the middle of it. I have to stand in the middle of this reality, this joy of practicing with you, and the trouble of practicing. So some of that trouble is of my own creation, and some of it's not. But I also know that sitting in the middle of the fire of my life, engaging in the practices that I mentioned, and some other ones, has been transformative. This willingness to sit in the middle of the fire of our life. This is the Bodhisattva practice. So there's a story about a Zen student that I would like to paraphrase. So the student went to his teacher and he said, "You know, I've been studying with you for a while, and all I do is spend my time helping you and attending to the temple. When are you going to begin to teach me the Dharma?" And the teacher said, I've been teaching all along, but you cannot see it. Soto Zen, in a way, is like that. I've been teaching you all along. So practice can be hidden to us. The results of our practice may not be apparent to us. Soto Zen, in some ways, is a lifestyle. We engage with formal practice. And through these activities of ritual and chanting, participation in the Zendo and Sangha activities, taking the precepts, etc., sitting Zazen, working together, all of these activities are the practice. That's our practice, as well as driving our car, paying attention to our dishes, etc., etc. But often we don't see the effect of our effort. So it is these practices that are our teachers and teaching us. It is the practice that is the juice, the fodder, the essence, the thing we push against, the thing that speaks to us, the language that we share together, the love of life that we share together, the joy of practicing together, sometimes the sadness, grief of practicing together, but that we practice together. We do this practice, and that effort is realization. That effort is practice, realization. They are one thing, because you are already Buddha. You already are Buddha. You are the nature of Buddha. We cannot help it. It is life itself is Buddha. So Buddha is never far away. Buddha is a turn towards. And it's through this practice in Soto Zen, our understanding of this practice, this thing that resonates for you, because it doesn't resonate, go do something else. There are lots of wonderful things to do in this life. There are lots of efficacious practices, religions to do. But if Soto Zen speaks to you doing these things, then let's do this dance together. But we cannot learn this without participating together, physically together. We cannot learn this without engaging in this warm hand to warm hand. And we learn through the mandala of manifesting realities, this inner being, through these specific activities of practice. So that's my understanding of practice. That's what I think is happening. Thank you very much.